Welcome to Rebecca Neal, the podcast, where I, Rebecca, your host, share thought-provoking episodes with you to help you take your life from where it is now to where you want it to be. I have a huge desire and passion to help people just like you get out of their own way and start living the life that they deserve. I'm here to help you feel empowered, educated, and inspired to get into massive action and create change in your life today. Join me weekly as I share insights into the online business world, social media, and many other motivational topics, and also interview some of the world's most incredible humans to help you become the best version of yourself. Hello and welcome back to Rebecca Neal, the podcast. Today is a little bit different. We actually have an amazing human on that is part of a business service that I want to share with you guys, which is Hippo Business Services. Hippo is about redefining success for business owners by getting them to audit their business and the roles they play with the aim to move their time, energy, and resources into performing happiness influences or profit-producing opportunities. They call this putting a business on the right road, remove, outsource, automate, and delegate. The end result is business owners as opposed to business operators. Today we have Dan Cross. Welcome to the show.
Awesome. Thanks for having me back. Very excited to be here.
It's awesome to have you on. So the first question I ask all my guests is, how do you have your coffee in the morning and do you drink coffee? Because I know we've had a brief conversation about some healthy things. So I want to hear your take on your morning.
Yeah, I think when we met, I'd been off coffee for a period of time and it was part of a cleanse that I was doing. And it was the single hardest part of the entire cleanse was going without my coffee. So I am a coffee drinker, lover. I have two coffees and you can tell where my headspace is at basically by what coffee I'm drinking. So I like a long black when I am motivated, happy, on the straight and narrow, I'll drink a long black. But my dessert coffee, which makes me feel much better, is a latte with honey. Sweeten it up. Yeah, so if you see me drinking that, you give me a bit of a cuddle, pat me on the back. You'll probably tell that I'm trying to motivate myself with that coffee.
Kind of like nurture yourself through drinking something delicious.
Yeah, absolutely. And it works too. It works.
I love that. I'm still on the ice long blacks, even though it's winter time coming around the corner. I just can't let them go now that I discovered them a year ago. It's just this addiction.
Oh, man, all coffee is addictive, right?
Yeah, it's so good. So tell us a little bit more about who Dan Cross is, and then I guess share a little bit more of the Hippo story and journey, as most of the audience love hearing stories about how businesses come about, because usually there's something cool in the background there. So, you know, Hippo business owners and operators, let's dive in there.
Yeah, sure. So, I mean, who am I? I think the way that I'd like to identify to people is I'm a dad. I'm very proud of being a dad. That's probably I would like to always lead my introduction with that. I've got three great, you know, beautiful kids, Nala, Fox and Acre. I'm a partner. I'm an entrepreneur. It's all I've ever done. I've never had a job, which is probably one of the interesting things about me, is I really don't understand the concept of working for somebody else. You could call it fortunate. Some people might call it unfortunate that I haven't experienced the other side, but I've been an entrepreneur or a business owner since I was 20. And before that, I played sport. So effectively still trading a skill or a talent for income as opposed to my time. And I would say I'm a lifetime learner and then an educator. And I think that, you know, really that's what we should all be doing. Learn, do, teach, repeat, right? So
yes.
I'm a real believer that if you're fortunate enough to find success in any category of your life, wealth, health, finances, business, whatever, you shouldn't be so arrogant to think that you got there by yourself. And so I've certainly had a lot of help. And so I really endeavor to send the elevator back down and help other people, which is hopefully we can bring some value by talking to your audience about that today.
Yes.
As for Hippo is like this really romantic business that I'm a part of. I'm, you know, co-founder with three other guys. And the reason why I say I'm quite romantic about it is because it really is the accidental business. And I think that we hear that a lot in our world. You know, I fell into this business or I fell into this concept, but Hippo is the most organic story of business that I have, because it truly was about just solving a personal problem that I was experiencing and that the other guys were experiencing. And then through that, this business was born. And so Hippo comes from 2017, 2018. I'd just been on, probably the best sprint that I'd had in business. I'd scaled a company which I'd incorporated in 2012. to over 200 staff around Australia and New Zealand. And we were in eight cities and, you know, we generated a few hundred million dollars in revenue. And that, you know, that business was doing brilliant. And I was at an award convention and I was, you know, I'd been nominated for some accolades and that night really became the epitome of my business career in that space, but then also the start of the new one, which was Hippo. So what happened was I was named as Entrepreneur of the Year and Business of the Year. And I went up on stage to collect this accolade, which was really something that I thought I was striving towards for years and years and years. And so you have the speech kind of planned and I'd practiced a little bit in the mirror and I had my best suit on and, you know, I'd put way too much cologne on and I climbed up the stage ready to turn and give this fantastic speech. And as I got to the lectern and looked out to this audience, I stumbled across these empty chairs and they were the chairs that were reserved for my family. So my partner and my kids who were meant to be there that night. And we had decided that it was just too difficult and, Megs couldn't make it. But when I was on stage looking out at these empty seats, which were reserved for my family, it really all hit me that I had failed via success, which is something that no one talks about. You know, it's very possible that you can fail via success. You can be working towards this external outcome that you want for yourself, only to realize that there's been a consequence or a cost for that success, which is a greater accolade, which was succeeding in my relationship or as a parent and a partner and all those other things. And so I kind of had this really horrible realization that I was looking at an audience of people who wanted to be me, but the cost of that was that the people that I loved didn't want to be with me. And that's a really kind of, it's horrible and wonderful all at the same time because sometimes we need to have these deep realizations. The unfortunate thing for me was that it happened in front of 1,000 people. And so I think everyone was waiting for this speech and instead they got 25 minutes of me crying. Literally broke down on stage in front of, in front of 1,000 people. And I stood there and I kind of just let it happen. And I think I really needed for that to happen. And, I suppose it was in that moment I realized that more is not always more and that bigger is not necessarily better. You know, bigger is bigger and better is better. And they're actually very different things. And I think we sometimes believe that they're one and the same. And so I had this live realization. The awards night finished. I kind of went home to my family and the very next day I went into my office and I sat down and for the first time in it would have been 8-9 years, I got on the internet and I started looking for jobs. Wow. And I just hit this pinnacle of business. And I was convinced that for me to win in the other areas of my life, that it was impossible to continue to the entrepreneurial pursuit. And, you know, when you think about that for a second, there's a lot of evidence that says that you can't, like you can't do both. You know, you look at a lot of the people that we admire and unfortunately what you realize is that entrepreneurs lead the stats when it comes to divorce or behavioral addiction and all of these other things. It's a real challenge for people. And so I actually had a friend of mine who was also a bit of a consultant or a coach that I bounced ideas from sitting across from me in the office. And she could tell that something was wrong. And I said, I think I need to walk away. I think I need to walk away from all of this, you know, for the benefit of my health, my happiness, my family, all these other things. I think I need to walk away from business. And she asked me a question. And the question was, what would it take for you to stay? And I knew the answer like instantly. And what it would take for me to stay was seven things. And I basically had seven tasks or seven things that I did. And I wrote them. I had a glass desk and I had a whiteboard marker and I wrote down these seven things in front of me. And I said, if all I had to do was these seven things, these are things that I love to do. These are things that I can't not do. I would find myself doing them anyway, whether I was paid for it or I wasn't paid for it. These are the things that are tangible. They move the needle in my business. It's very obvious the difference when I do them versus somebody else does them. Like if I just did those seven things, I could stay in business forever. Like I'd be in business for 50, 60 years. Like this really brings me a lot of joy. And I can defend the work in those areas because it's so tangible. So there's a lot of evidence to say this is worth my time. And I drew a big circle around those seven things. And she, you know, this lady looks back at me and she goes, well, Dan, there's so much more to your business than that. And she starts rattling off all of these other tasks. What about this activity? What about this activity? And she continues to go on. And so I started to like hear what she was saying and I started to cherry pick different tasks and different activities. And I said, you know, that one, and that one, like I don't mind those things. I certainly don't love them, but I'm indifferent towards them. I don't mind doing them from time to time, but I'm just tired of having them on my day-to-day list. Like you know, they really don't spark any energy in me. And so if I had to do it like every now and then, I could do that, but certainly not all the time. I said, it's a bit like this. And I drew a second circle outside of the original circle. And I was like, those things kind of live out here, you know, that they're not out, they're outside my core kind of business activities. But she wasn't finished. And she goes, well, what about all of these things? And she starts throwing all these other things. And these things were the things I like literally remember physically feeling sick as she said them. And these were very administrative based, like quite chore like in my business. Things that I, as she was saying them, I couldn't believe I was still doing them 10 years later after starting my business. Like really basic stuff. And I was like, they're the things. That's why I'm leaving. That's why I'm done. I'm walking away from the business. Those things, and I draw a third circle, they live out here. And these are really the negative things. They bring me no joy. They're not tangibly beneficial to my business. I have no idea why I'm still doing them. They're out here. And it was funny. So if you can imagine the visuals of this, I was kind of sitting looking at this bird's eye view of a bullseye and then two other circles. So imagine like a dartboard on my desk. And in that moment, I remember looking across the table to this lady, Danielle, saying, I think I know how to fix my own problem. And she said, what are you going to do? And I said, I'm going to spend the next 12 months figuring out how to spend 90% of my time in this middle bullseye. And that bullseye is now what we call the hippo bullseye, the things that are happiness influences. They bring joy to you. You do them because you can't not do them. You know, they're just energizing, or they're profit-producing opportunities. They move the needle in your business. And so I'm going to spend 12 months figuring out how I can spend 90% of my energy there, 10% of my energy dabbling back and forth and dancing in my business in these other areas. And I'm in 12 months from now, I'm not going to ever do any of these things ever again. And Danielle kind of looked back at me like, you know, you're a dickhead. How is that possible? What are you going to do type thing, right? Hopefully I'm allowed to swear. How is that possible? And I said, I'm going to find a way to remove them, outsource them, automate them, or delegate them. And I didn't know the answer at that point in time. I didn't know what was going to be removed, outsourced, automated, delegated. I had no concept, but I was like, I, if I'm not doing them, there's only four options. And that's where the acronym comes from. How do you get your business on the right road and having this constant kind of audit process where you're really just sharpening, you're sharpening the allocation of your time. You're sharpening the allocation of your resources. And the only way to do that is to constantly be checking, is that still relevant for my business? Can we remove that? Does that still serve a purpose, or is that purely habitual? Is that outdated? Is that an old system? Is that non-required anymore? Let's get rid of those things. And it's a good question people who are listening could ask themselves straight away. Like an activity to do after listening to this podcast is to go back into your business and just say, what could I remove from my business without anybody even knowing that I'm no longer doing it? And I guarantee you that there is 10 or 15 things that if you stopped doing, no one would even know, right? Like there would just be no consequence to that at all, but you're allocating maybe 10 or 15 hours to it. And so that was the start of Hippo. And I went through a bunch of different trial and error and mistakes and whatnot, but the consequence was so high of me not doing this that it was like, I got 12 months to figure this thing out. And if I don't figure out, I'm walking away anyway. So if I want to balance both my family and my business, I've got zero option here to make that work. And so the next 12 months, that's what I did. And probably the most effective part of what I did outside of some automation and using technology better was outsourcing. And so I hired my first virtual assistant and that just completely changed my life. And within maybe eight or 10 weeks after that, a friend of mine was like, hey man, what are you doing? Like something's going on, you know? And I was like, yeah, man, I've got this staff member now who does all these things for me. It's like, right. And he said, could you do that for me? And I didn't know if I could do that for him, but you know, my quest to help, I was like, I think so. Like, let me see if I can hire another one and yeah, I'll train him up and I'll see if I can help your business a little bit. And then that led to a second one, a third one. And all of a sudden we had, you know, eight people who were effectively paying me money to hire them this virtual assistant and implement them into their business and induct that person. And that was when I started talking about it, you know, and I've got three, you know, great mates of mine who, you know, collectively we have over 50 years of experience in business. And I started talking to them about it and they're like, man, I got that problem. I've got that problem. I got like, that's a business. And I think I, like most businesses, what you think is your own problem tends to be a marketplace problem. And so a fantastic way to build any business is just go start by solving all of your own problems. And so we started by solving our problems, as you know, and that was when we decided to actually incorporate the business, Hippo Business Services, and you know, like I said, brought four great people together and started going out there with this goal to help 10,000 entrepreneurs experience Hippo. And that, whether that be via our education, you know, services, or whether that be through systemizing their company or actually accessing a staff member via our service, we didn't really mind. But we're like, what a great world if entrepreneurs genuinely got to experience the benefits that they got into entrepreneurship for. And I think for most people, like myself, I got into business because I thought I would have more time. Right? And I would make more money whilst experiencing those things. And I don't know about you, but I didn't experience that for my first 7 years in business. You know, I certainly generated more income, but it wasn't combined with less work or, you know, there's more responsibility, there's more risk, there's more challenges. And so it's challenging, and we don't talk about this enough. You know, I think we just don't congratulate entrepreneurs for being an entrepreneur enough, because you're signing yourself up, for me, one of the biggest challenges of your life. I think parenting, partnering, and entrepreneurship will probably be the big three. And when you combine all three of those together in particular, which we all want to do, I think a lot of us want to do, you're up for some challenges. And so I think, you know, we need to educate people and help them out.
Yes. What an incredible story. Because obviously I know a little bit, but now I really get the grasp of where it all began. And you really told that nicely with the bullseye. Because I was going to ask you about that, because obviously I've just brought on a VA for the first time. And we were talking just before we jumped on about, I literally am the CEO, the admin person, the HR person. You know, I talk to my clients like I'm here by myself as a solopreneur, right? That's why I got a puppy so I can talk to her during the day. But it's really challenging because, like you said, as an entrepreneur, we work harder than we ever thought we probably would. And sometimes I'm like, fuck it, I'm going to get a job. Like, yeah, it would be so much easier just to go 9 to 5, you know, turn up, do what you were told and go home. But the ultimate goal of being an entrepreneur is creating that life that we truly desire and the income that goes with that. And if we can focus on what we get into business for, which are the things, like you said, in the middle, that are the things that bring happiness and really do align with us and the reason we did start our businesses in the first place, then it's a really powerful thing. So outsourcing and delegating it seems so simple, but it's something that we are so challenged by. And I know for me and clients and my audience do struggle with this sort of thing. And so where, I guess, let's break down some of the myths around like outsourcing, you know, both in business and outsourcing what people can do and delegating and stuff like that.
Yeah, sure. I think, first of all, I think the myth that we need to bust in business in general is that, especially for solo, you know, entrepreneurs, is that we identify too much as our business. And that's the reason why we struggle to delegate and to have teams and build teams and get great at these other parts of the business. But you are not your business. And I think, a lot of people talk about that. But what does that actually look like in the business? You need to understand that they're two different entities. You know, there's Dan Cross and then there's lots of businesses that I'm involved in, but they are certainly not who I am. And so I need to divorce myself, my happiness, my ego, my time from those entities, and I need to see them as a physical entity that can live, breathe, grow without me. And I think that if it can't do that, well, then I don't really have a business, right? I have a glorified job and I might have a higher income, but it's root of me, I think, in the definition of entrepreneurship to say that I am an entrepreneur, I am a business owner. I think that to be a business owner means that you are the conductor, to use an analogy, the conductor of the band. You're not playing the instruments or an instrument. And I think for solopreneurs in particular, they're not playing one instrument, as you just kind of said, you're playing like every instrument possible.
Yeah.
And to do that means that you can't be doing any of them as well as you possibly could. And so I think what all great business owners need to be thinking is what a few things. What is my, I call it an asymmetric allocation of time, of money, of resources. Asymmetric being one input will give me 10 outputs of three things, time, money, or joy, right? So what is, if I put 1 minute here, how do I get 10 minutes back or $10 back or 10 notches of happiness back, which you can measure personally in terms of the joy that you experience from something. But we need to be thinking asymmetrically. And if we're not thinking that way, it means that we're naturally going to be drawn back into this dark hole of doing the things that you just shouldn't be doing. So the way that I try and think of as a mental model for myself is like, what am I trying to achieve as a business owner? Or how do I make sure I'm doing the right things as a business owner? I think of an entrepreneur as someone who thinks, creates, systemizes, and delegates. And what they do is they get paid for thinking and creating, and they pay people for the doing.
Yeah.
And so if you think about that for a second, why is that so powerful? It's powerful because your ability to do declines over a period of time. And so if I sat with you, Beck, and you said, and I said, why are you in business? And you said, well, because I want freedom, choice, happiness, all these. And I said, how do you define that? What's the scoreboard to measure that? It's very likely that it would come back to a wealth plan. And so you would have some financial metrics or goals that you're working towards, right? And so I go, okay, awesome. So what you're telling me is that you're expecting your income and your wealth to increase over a period of time, but you've attached your ability to increase that wealth to something which decreases over time, which is your ability to do or your desire to do, because both decline over time. We get old, we get ailments, we get over it.
We burn out, right?
We just get tired of it. And there is a law of diminishing returns to desire. There just is. And there's a law of diminishing returns to your skill set and your ability to do things. Whereas if you contrast that to, okay, let's forget about doing things then and let's focus on thinking and creating and systemizing, get paid for thinking and pay other people for the doing. Now I'm the conductor, I'm not playing in the band. Our ability to think, our ability to build our IQ, our ability to start to predict the future because we've experienced so many things. We can see around the corner and we can be a bit more macro when it comes to trends and all these things. That gets better over time. So I'm like, man, I got into business as a 20-year-old and I'm 31 now and I'm excited to be 40 and 45 and 50 because in my mind I go, imagine what my ability will be like to think. Imagine how many more books I would have read. Imagine how many more learnings I would have had. Man, my ability to think is going to be like crazy by then. My ability to do, probably not so much, you know. I'm already struggling to do that. So I think that as an entrepreneur, I would judge my success on that. Am I getting paid for thinking? Because there is no limitation on how much I can think and create. So how many money systems can I build to build this wealth income, you know, plan that I have for myself? Versus how many hours can I work and how many people can I service and all this. I'm like, I would rather focus on how I make my money than how much I make. And I think that that's a good place for a lot of business owners to start, because if you get that right at the start, how you make it versus how much you make, man, you'll be motivated, right? You'll be motivated to go and build more and more and more of them. And I think that half of the key to succeeding as a business owner is keeping your fuel tanks full for long enough.
Yes.
And you know, so you can go the journey. So I as an entrepreneur, I'd go that there's some myths that we probably need to bust. And probably the other one is that you can scale your way to freedom. I think that the answer isn't scale. The answer is structure.
Mm.
You can structure your way to freedom. I tried just getting a bigger business and hiring more people and doing more sales and getting more clients and that the consequence of that was me crying on stage, as we said. However, when I focused on structure of being able to get that time back for myself and be a bit more nimble in the way that I do things. And if you look at today, I'm involved in more businesses than I've ever been involved in, have more staff than I've ever had and generate more revenue than I've ever had. But I've got more time to dance between, you know, the many different things that I do. And like I said, and now I can identify first as a dad. Whereas the reality is in 2017, that it would have been arrogant for me to say, first, I'm a dad. What I would have had to say, which is painful to even say now, is I would have had to say I'm a business owner and somewhere down here I'm a dad. And that's quite sad, right? And that's the truth. That's how I was living. And that's the change I needed to make.
I love that. And it's about almost recognizing what your values are as well and aligning your work life with your values, because for you, obviously it was one of the first things you said, you're very proud of being a dad. So that's one of your highest values then in life is to be that present father. So having that as, you know, a thing for people to think about, what do they value in life and where are they able to spend their time doing those things right now as an entrepreneur or a business owner?
Yeah, 100%. And how long can you defend delayed gratification? I think is the other thing, because what makes us great as entrepreneurs is we believe in delayed gratification. But if you think about applying delayed gratification to your kids or your partner, it doesn't work. You can't say to your partner, just for 3 more years and then I will be available for you. You know, relationships work on instant gratification. They work on these real defining moments that you need to be available for. And so therefore you need to be free of your time so that you can be available at the right time, right? And so defining moments for me are key, and they don't check your diary, they don't check your schedule, and so therefore your structure will determine if you can be available or you cannot be available. And so setting those things up proactively as an entrepreneur is a really important thing, because I think that one of the reasons why we do lead the divorce rate is because the things that make us great as entrepreneurs actually make the challenges, you know, for us as partners and as parents and all these other areas. It's really direct contrast in many ways. So, so I think it's important. So, I mean, that's more business. And I know we want to touch more about the VA space and maybe some myths around that as well. Is that?
You know? Yeah, well, I think just on what you were saying then, as a coach, I've been a coach for nearly 12 years, and a lot of my audience are coaches, and I work directly with coaches. And I think something you were sharing there, I think sometimes we think as a coach, we don't have a business, like it's not like a company, right? And that's why we get caught up, and I'm sure people listening can relate to what I'm saying, is that you get caught up in saying, well, I am my business, right? And so I definitely, like, I probably should have outsourced years ago, and, you know, I'm definitely loving having a VA, although it's only new. I'm definitely struggling with how or what to, or how I'm still doing things, and then I'm overdoing things, and I think I'm doubling up, like I'm all over the place. And I think there must be a transition time, right, to let go and release things. But I think it's about, yeah, I guess, like me personally, and I know other people feel this way, is knowing what to delegate or what to outsource to a VA, or, you know, letting go of that desperate clinginess to the things that we think we need to do ourselves. Like, what are the difference? How do we know to do those things? Is it coming back to that bullseye, like you were saying, and really breaking that down?
Yeah, I think the challenge of people have is they think of the bullseye as an event, the way that it happened for me. But the end of that story is that the bullseye then became this like everyday, almost journal like concept that I was experiencing regularly. So as I was participating in my business, I would literally just start asking myself, where does this sit in the bullseye? You know, it was almost like having a daily mindfulness period of my day to go, okay, what have I just done in the last hour? And where would all of those things sit if I had to go and now place them? And so it became almost like this habit that I went through over a period of time, as opposed to an event, right? It's a bit like goal setting or visualization. It's not something you do once. It's something that you're constantly thinking about, constantly getting back to that process. And so living HIPPO, and we call it living HIPPO because it has to effectively become a way of life in the way that you go about your business. And so it's constantly thinking about it. Where does this thing live? Do I want to do this thing again? Is this relevant for is this a good trade-off, for my time? Is this beneath my pay grade? Is this in line with my goals for my income for myself, and really understanding those things? I think a good question for everybody to ask, and this might even help yourself there, Beck, in this early part of yourself working with a VA, is a good thing to ask is, what is the primary benefit of me still doing this? What's the primary benefit? And the second question to ask is, what is the secondary consequence of me doing this? Yeah. So the primary benefits, if you speak to a business owner, they go, well, the primary benefit I have of me doing this right now is control.
Yes.
Right? And I go, fantastic. I'm glad that you feel that you're in control. Okay. Can you think of any secondary consequences that come due to that control? And the person goes, well, I suppose it takes an extra, 2 hours of my week. And I go, awesome. And can you think of a secondary consequence to that 2 hours being allocated to that? And they go, well, I haven't seen my son play soccer for, this whole season. And I go, okay, awesome. And can you think of an additional consequence to you not watching your son play soccer for a bit? And then eventually, it's a bit like going the layers deep, right?
LP right there.
And eventually you get to this place where it's like, now all you need to ask is the consequence greater than the benefit? Mm. And almost any change that we go through, right, is it's really this internal battle that we go through between how I feel now versus what I want next.
Yeah.
So you might say what I want next is more time, freedom, choice. But how you feel now working with your VA is maybe overwhelmed, anxious. What if they don't do a good job? What if it damages my brand? What if I lose some of my audience? So how you feel now, which is natural to go through change, versus what you want next. Now, one of those will win. If how you feel now wins, you keep running your business the same way you're running it, which will have a secondary consequence down the line.
Yes.
If how you feel now loses to what you want next, it means that you have to go through this adjustment period. Where what's uncomfortable slowly becomes comfortable. And I think that that's a 12-week period. You know, if I was to help a client on board, I would talk about 3-4-week slots. The first 4 weeks is what we call the induction period. The second period is called the conversion period. And the third 4-week period is a contribution period. And really what I'm saying there is it'll take you 12 weeks to get a genuine contribution from a new staff member, whether that staff member be hired and working directly next to you every day, or whether that be staff member being someone that you connect with virtually. It doesn't matter. You're about 12 weeks away from feeling any benefit from having that additional team member in your team. And so the challenge for people over that 12 weeks is, I could do it better if I did it myself. I could do it faster if I did it myself. And so they fall back into that primary benefit. And so you've got to keep reminding yourself, why am I doing this? Why am I trying to find things to outsource? Why am I trying to find things to automate or delegate or remove? And why is this so important to me? And so, yeah, first 4 weeks induction, it's really getting the person to understand the systems, the structures, how you like to do things. It's a lot of checking their work. It's a lot of doing things together. You'll probably find you're putting in more time.
And yeah, then I feel like I'm doing things double. Yeah. I'm like, what? Wasn't this meant to be easy?
Yeah. But if you think about, like, if we just quickly dive into delegation, like, what does good delegation look like? Delegation looks like I do it.
Teaching.
Yeah, it looks like I do it, you watch.
Yeah.
And then it looks like, you know, maybe we do it together and you continue to ask questions. And then it's you do it, I watch. And then it's you do it by yourself. And then hopefully it's you do it, someone else watches. And so now we're multiplying our business. And so people shouldn't even be thinking about having a VA. What they should really be thinking about is having a virtual team.
Yeah, that's awesome.
That's what they should be thinking about. And building a business. Like if you're a solopreneur right now and you don't identify as a business, I would say that that's probably the reason why you're not a business. And it's kind of like what comes thought first, right? And I think you would agree, like the thought has to come before the deed, right? We've got to think of ourselves that way. So, yeah, it's there is that challenge. But I'm glad that you've been so open and sharing that because you are going through this experience right now.
Yeah, it's amazing. And I did have a moment where I took my puppy for a walk and I felt guilt-free for the first time. Like it was the craziest feeling because I was like, oh, normally I'd be doing this, but someone's doing it for me. So I could actually go for a walk and be like, cool, it's getting done. It was such a weird feeling because I've been in business a long time and I would probably more identify and not so much as a company or a business like we're sharing because I have been doing all of the things, but you're constantly on and I'm still constantly on. I don't think that ever will go away because I'm a thought, you know, I'm always curious and I got a curious mind and I'm wanting to create. However, it was so nice to hand over things that were not as important for me to do and actually have that moment, hour of guilt-free sort of, it was actually a feeling in my body. It was crazy cool. So I fully understand that there's a process and it's like training a new staff member or training someone that has no idea what you do. And then I can see the reward at the end of that will be powerful.
And your confidence grows in that person as you build a relationship with them, you know, and all of a sudden, you know, I think to really get free of your business, you eventually get to a place where you don't just delegate tasks, you delegate decisions. You know, one of the things I do here with my staff that are onshore here working in the bricks and mortar businesses is they all do their HIPPO. And a lot of my key team members actually have their own VA so that they can focus on higher income producing opportunities and they've got a great, you know, great life and they have their own VAs that they work with. But we're big on like, don't just delegate the thing, delegate the decision around the thing. So now I'm genuinely free because I don't want to be at this place where I'm constantly having to check. It's a bit like as a business, having a budget, for example, anything under a certain cost, you make the decision. And once it goes over this cost, that's when we now check in. And so we're creating rules now around how our business operates. If you want to understand like what is a good business, think of a phone or think of your car. The cool thing about both of those things is that I could give you my phone and you could continue to use it. I could get out of my car and you could step into my car and you could drive my car. Now, maybe we don't drive it quite as well or whatever, but the benefit of both of those examples is the hero is this, not this.
Yeah, they work well without you.
Correct. And so you've got to think of your business where the system becomes the hero, not your skill set. Mm-hmm. And one of our sayings I think you've heard Becca share before is that skills are scary and systems are safe. If you want to have this business, which always has this inbuilt insurance policy, it has to have systems and structures around it. And you can do that for almost anything. And, you know, I suppose the argument that people have against me is, yeah, but how do I sit, like my business isn't systemizable because, you know, I am my business or because I'm super talented or, you know, no one can do what I do. And I think that the way that you have to think about things is the systems aren't something that you create. They're something that you capture. And so I believe with technology now, you can capture any system, you know, through videoing things and create, you know, creating recordings and flowcharts and sharing examples and having case studies and having delayed, you know, release on things that we can check work. And I think you can capture any system in a business now. And that, once again, I come back to how do you identify as being successful? Is it how well you can do something, or is it how well something can get done without you?
Yeah, and it comes back to the values again, like what's important to you and what do you want to be spending your time on and what, you know, where do you want to be and where do you want to be more present?
Yeah, 100%. And that's where HIPPO is cool, because it's different for everybody.
Mm.
No one can tell someone what their HIPPO is. And it's funny because sometimes I'll sit with a client and they'll go, this is my HIPPO. And I sit there going,
you're like, oh my God.
Oh my, that is horrible. That is the worst. But that's their HIPPO. And, yeah. You know, and that's the cool thing about entrepreneurs. Some people are like, man, I just want to do all of this data entry stuff. And I'm like, that is the worst thing in the world I could imagine doing. But that's their HIPPO. And it's such a personable and unique thing to different people. Yeah. You know, once again, it's why I'm quite romantic about the concept of HIPPO.
I love it. It's really cool. And so I guess let's talk about some practical things that you can outsource. Like most of my audience, and obviously I work with coaches and network marketers that, you know, that have online businesses, and we're doing it all, like I've said. What are some practical things? Like if people are going, oh, I wonder if I have anything, or what is it that I could outsource or delegate in my business from a coach's point of view or something like that?
Yeah. I mean, I have a VA that helps me. You know, I'm certainly not full-time like you guys are, but I certainly help out some other businesses and consult and speak. And so my VA, you know, she does some really basic stuff around my admin, my billing, you know, creating my folders if I'm onboarding a brand new client, for example. So whether that be sending, receiving paperwork, making sure everything's filed correctly, chasing up old invoices. I mean, it's some low-level engagement with audiences. She certainly creates the ability for me to be able to push out enough content to be able to play the game of different algorithms and whatnot across different platforms. I think it's very, very, very difficult to create enough by yourself if you actually want to be servicing your clients. Do you know what I mean? Like, you don't want your full-time business to be purely just content creation. You need to find a way to batch that and distribute that in a more autonomous way, separate to yourself. And so things like editing videos, creating micro clips, quote cards, resharing approved other people's feed. You know, so I'll give, for example, three or four people that I don't care what they post, you have my permission to reshare that on my own feed or to my own audience, because I there's enough goodwill that other person has with me that I'm confident whatever they're sharing, we can reshare. And so that's a thing. I get a report, for example, every week on same thing. I pick top five people every month, and I want to know what their top five posts were from an engagement standpoint, because I want to know what is the trends that people are talking about, what's quite time sensitive, what is it that I could go and create some content around.
So that's almost like research, right, for you?
100%. It's research, it's development.
Yeah.
It's generating my posting schedule. It's archive shares. It's a really easy way to fill up your own feeds. Do you know what I mean? Like, just go and pull out some of your own archives that went really brilliant, because if you're constantly growing this new audience, people aren't scrolling back 30, 40 posts deep, right? And so getting to a place of, re-archiving different things. Lead generation, influencer reach outs, email clean outs, inbox zero. I mean, man, there's, once again, journal your day, journal your week, and just start asking yourself, do I like this?
Yeah.
Just generating profit. And I think if I'm a coach, I would be thinking about, am I building new products? Am I ascending my customers through a product matrix? Am I moving people kind of through my ascension ladder? Or am I building a bigger audience or servicing my audience? And if I'm not doing one of those four things, that's all I should be really doing, to be fair. Like, someone else can probably do it. If you've if we were to define what is a virtual assistant? Okay, a virtual assistant is just a staff member that you connect with virtually rather than in person. And so what that does is it separates the need for geography to be attached to talent. And we know this. And I think if you look at the internet and how it's sped up globalization for coaches or for business people, we instantly went, this is amazing, because I can get customers from anywhere in the world and I can get product from anywhere in the world. I love this. The problem has been is that the uptake to also get staff from anywhere around the world has not been as quick. And so my whole thing is, if you benefit from this on a sales level, and if you benefit from this on a product level, purchasing, why should you not benefit from this on a labor level? That's all that the internet has done. It's just made globalized labor possible, where you can disconnect talent from geography. And, you know, the way that I explain it to people is this: if you were to build a soccer team, let's just say you like soccer, and you could pick anybody in the world to be in that soccer team, let's say it's the, you want to build the best soccer team in the world, where would you get the players? And people go, well, you get them from all over the world. And I go, why? And they go, well, because talent is all over the world. And I go, so you're telling me that you wouldn't go down to the, like, the local soccer club and try and just pick the best players from down there? And they're like, no way in the world, man, because, you know, if you wanted to have the best players, in the, like, you'd get them from everywhere. And I go, great. So now imagine building your business that way, where all of a sudden the postcodes are relevant. And the only thing that now matters is the things that matter to your business, which is skill set, character-based, you know, continuity around the characters that we share, and then that it's financially viable for me to do that. And just like, you know, once again, the internet increased competition, which drove down prices because of local labor costs. You now have the benefit of being able to access that as an entrepreneur as well. And I think that when people really get their minds around that concept, like, wow, I'm actually kind of already involved in this space already. I'm just not fully involved in this space because I'm not accessing labor that way. But you must have customers all over the world, I'd imagine.
Like, yeah,
all
of that. Totally. Customers, clients, everything. And it's, you're right, like, we have access globally. And I'm always like, have a negative and a positive view on social media, but it's more in the positive. I'm so grateful because it's built my business globally. Yeah. Like, people, if I didn't have Instagram or it didn't exist, I wouldn't have the experience I have with my business, because I have access to so many humans on so many different planets, like countries, and, you know, different experiences. It's amazing. And so why not, like you said, outsource to those types of people?
100%. I think it's just, it's a bit, you're a bit half-baked if you're only accessing customers and product mixes that way. Like, take your whole business global, which means build a globalized team as well. So I think, once again, it's, you know, I would say that we're still in the early adoption phase of this concept. I think it's lagged behind selling globally and taking product globally. I think labor has lagged a little bit because there's some misconceptions around it.
Yeah.
You know, I think those common misconceptions being around, what about local jobs? What about the quality of work? You know, which I'm happy to address, but, you know, all of those types of things, they instantly enter your mind when you start thinking about, you mean you're going to hire somebody in a different country that's going to work my business, which is based here in Brisbane or Gold Coast? Or, I don't know how I feel about that, right? And that's the challenge that we go through. So they're the myths that we need to bust for people so that they first feel comfortable and then confident that they can get to a place of competence that they could do this.
Yeah.
And it's, I think, in that order, we need to be comfortable with it first.
For which sure.
Expectations needed, yeah.
I have a video guy that I've worked with for probably a year now. He's in Pakistan, and he's amazing, and he's so onto it. He's so, and he just, it's just like having someone here. Yeah, the time difference is slightly different, but he's amazing at his work. And, you know, I just think it's so cool to be able to connect globally with labor.
Yeah. And I, like, 100%. And I think of, you know, it's a bit like, this might be polarizing. Maybe I shouldn't say it, but I'm all for people, more so than I am all for the invisible borders of a country or a state or, into the people fight that nationalism kind of flag. And I go, okay, but I just really like people. I really like human beings. And so I really don't actually mind if I'm going to provide work for somebody in the Philippines or in Bangladesh or India.
Totally.
I feel really quite empowered by that. And I actually feel like there's a greater sense of gratitude that comes from those people than I would get sometimes locally.
I agree. I'm totally with you there. And I feel like we almost present opportunities to people that are somewhat less fortunate or not able to access great work or like jobs. And I feel like we're able to provide them with that.
Yeah. And I think once you understand that I think it's more affordable. I think we all know that. And people say, how could it be good for them if I'm paying, less than what I would pay a local? And I think that you need to understand that you're paying based on local rates, which is relevant to local cost of living. And so one of the things that we do at HIPPO is we make sure that our staff all have the opportunity to work from home, all have the opportunity to make a higher income than what they could typically make. And that the concept of living HIPPO can kind of be culturally done right through our business. And so that's how we, for me, do everything with a moral compass to make sure that we feel really comfortable about it.
I love that. It's really powerful. So if someone is listening to this all now and they're like, maybe I do need a VA, Where do they begin? Where do they start? How does someone take the next step towards getting one in their business?
Yeah, I mean, I would start by jumping on our website where you can actually download what we call the Hippo Journey and get access to the Bullseye. We've, you know, really now turned that into a bit of an info product for people and start.
Very good. Yeah. I loved it. I thought I was so impressed by it. It was very cool.
And start, you know, start taking that journey to start with to work out where do I want to spend my time and what would I like somebody to help me with and assist me with and start going through that process. And then I'd schedule a call with, you know, with one of our Hippo team members who can take you through that journey. I think that when you're doing this for the first time, you really do need someone to hold your hand through it. And I think a lot of it more is helping you overcome your own internal objections. I think that that's the challenge for people. It's not, does this work? I think COVID proved to us that we all effectively became virtual assistants for a period of time. We were all working from phones and laptops, and that's all a virtual assistant is. It's somebody who's going to connect with you virtually. And it could be anywhere in the world. It could be locally or it could be offshore, you know, and Hippo helps people with both. I think, you know, once you overcome those challenges, it's a necessity, you know, if you want to identify somebody who owns their business, not just operates it. So yeah, I'd go to our website, hippobusinessservices.com.au. I'd schedule a call with somebody. You know, Dustin's our project manager there.
I really love Dustin. Good dude. Brilliant.
And he's helped so many business owners now in so many varying circumstances that his experience in being able to help you go through this process is really second to none. Yeah.
And that's what I love about what you guys do. And I was really fascinated when I start to learn about Hippo is that it's one thing going, oh my God, what do I delegate? And how do I like even do that part? But where do I find a good VA? And I know that getting them overseas is more affordable, but how do I get there? Do I go to the Philippines? Do I like people, you know, have that thought process. So what you guys do is so brilliant because you actually hold someone's hand to take them through the process. You've sifted through and found the best VAs. Like it's a really cool business concept.
Yeah. We really aim to take all of those teething issues out of, you know, accessing this marketplace. So we do contracts and payments and currency changes and all of those things that you think legally, how do I do this? And how do I do it? Like, you don't have to do it, you know, get your not to-do list sorted, get in contact with us and we do all of the other things. Yeah. And then you obviously make sure you systemize your business. Our goal, like just to make sure I get this out for everybody, my goal is to teach business owners to get their business to make dollars, and dollars is something everybody should remember. And hopefully if you're listening in your car, pull it over and write this down, because this is how your business should be structured. If it's structured to make dollars, it means that you delegate or outsource, you focus on leverage, not legwork, and you achieve your revenue from systems, not skills.
Yes.
That's dollars, right? Delegate or outsource, leverage, not legwork, achieve your revenue from your systems, not your skills. When you structure it for that, all those reasons why you got into business, time, freedom, choice, they become possible for you, right? And that's not me giving a guarantee that you'll get there, but they become possible now for you. Whereas if your business is not structured that way, you're really fighting a losing battle. You're not structured in a way where that's even possible for you, right? And I think there's enough risk already in being an entrepreneur that we shouldn't create more just by having poor structures, right? So
I love that. And that's one of the things I teach my clients is systems and structures around setting themselves up the right way. Because if you don't treat your business like a business, you've got a hobby. And so it's a really important thing. So I'd love to switch gears and go back over to Dan Cross. I'd love to know what you are personally reading at the moment, or what's on your bedside table, what's in your ears, because I'm a book fiend. I'm reading as many books as I can between Christmas and Christmas. I've read 7 already this year. Which is crazy since Christmas. But there's so many amazing books out there. Are you reading something at the moment, or is there one that you can recommend that people should check out?
I'm constantly reading multiple books. I think I probably read, so I read a lot. I'm sometimes embarrassed to talk about how I read. I read a lot. But I read probably different. And I think the beauty of reading, whether it be history or business or philosophy or any of those kinds of topics, is they're almost like choose your own adventure books. So I think of reading as like this treasure hunt where I go, man, there is one word, sentence, page, you know, chapter that if I get that, find that, there's a gold nugget here that'll completely change the direction of my life. So I've got to find that. And so I kind of sift through multiple books at any one time. I'll have 5 or 6 on the go. Right now, I'm sequentially, so properly reading a book called The Sovereign Individual, which is very thought-provoking, equally
very challenging. I think Regan's reading that at the moment too.
Yeah, he is. Yeah, I recommend it. It's equally kind of enlightening and terrifying at the same time, in terms of, you know, the fall of different kind of frameworks of control with the introduction of technology, whether that be the fall of the church and religion, and then government, the nation state, the rise of the sovereign individual. And I think solopreneurs are a great example of the rise of the individual. And so we're going through that at the moment. I think that's a great book. I just finished reading Breathe by James Nestor. I love, you know, breath work and different concepts of breath, and you know, how, you know, that combined with meditation has been a game changer, obviously, for my life, and my kids even get involved in those things. In my ears right now, and probably a different one for your audience, is which is polarizing probably once again, but I love it, which has been Conversations with God, because it's really that detachment between spirituality and religion and having your own relationship with different things. So I really enjoyed that. Oh man, I could talk about books all day. We could do another hour
podcast. We could have you on for the top five books. I love that. That's really cool. And there's some great books there for people to check out. So is there anything else that you would love to leave us with? Thank you so much for your time today. You've shared so much great stuff for people. Like you said, sifting through for the golden nugget. I always want my audience to feel like they've taken away one of those things. And I feel like we have definitely shared a lot today. But is there anything else?
I think if you are right now challenged as a business owner, I would tell you that you don't have to accept the business that you have. You can build the one that you want, but it does take intent, and the space between where you are and where you want to be is always going to be called the same thing, which is change. And I think you and definitely your audience knows that. I'm kind of preaching to the converted, but I think knowing and experiencing are two very different things. And I think sometimes we need to be able to step back and look objectively at our own businesses and say, hey, you know, do I need to re-educate myself a little bit here to be able to get myself to a place where I can serve the biggest audience I possibly can and I leave the biggest impact that I can? And the only way I'm going to do that is if I do focus on this asymmetric allocation of my time, resources, and money, which means I need to do what only I can do and let somebody else do everything else. And I think if you just take that simple message, you'll be on the right path. Yeah,
that's very, very, very cool. So I know you mentioned before where people can find more about Hippo and the Hippo journey. I will link the notes in the show notes, and they can book a call through there. Is that the best place for people, like on their website?
Yeah, I mean, I'm happy to share Dustin's direct email for people who want to get involved. And you know what? I'd love to actually do something for your audience, Beck. You know, I actually jumped on your podcast and listened to a few of your recent ones, and I love what you do. Yeah, I love the messages that you're putting out. I think you're doing a brilliant job. So if anybody wants to email Dustin at hippobusinessservices.com.au, or if you jump on the website, book a call, and when you speak to one of our team, mention that you listen to this podcast, we will be happy to waive any of our onboard fees and actually give somebody a week free as well. So they can just get themselves running, and we can get them involved in really the new world of business.
Awesome.
So
thank you. That's very generous of you guys. That's awesome. Thank you so, so much. And hey, thank you so much for sharing your wisdom. And it's been such a great opportunity chatting with you. And I think you've really shared, and I guess it put light on what the virtual assistant looks like, or having someone, or delegating. And I think there's going to be a lot of people that are very curious about getting that in their business as well, and kind of stepping away from the things they don't need to do anymore.
Yeah, awesome. Look forward to helping out some of your audience.
Well, today's episode was a special one because it is actually episode 100. Yes, Rebecca Neal, the podcast has been around for 100 episodes. So if you have been here since the start, thank you with the greatest, biggest heart of all today, because without you as a listener, it wouldn't exist, because I need listeners to continue producing great podcasts with great inspiring guests. So I hope that you enjoyed today's episode. Please don't forget to reach out to Hippo, because they are so incredible, especially if you're looking for a VA and you just want to take out the guesswork or the hard bits and pieces that come along with trying to find the right person and making sure that you're going to get the right deal and be looked after and all of those things. Again, please share on stories. As I always say, tag me, tag Rebecca Neal the podcast. I am Rebecca Neal and I will share it on stories, and I always look forward to connecting with you over on Instagram in the DMs. Until next week, I hope you enjoy the rest of your day.